Today is July the 5th, and we are on page, we're going to be on page 218 tonight, 218 and 220. And let me give a quick review of where we ended off last time. We had gone over the dreams of the butler and the baker, and Yosef's interpretations. We said last time how the deeper meanings of the dreams, and how the dreams really were all about the Jews eventually becoming slaves in Egypt and then getting out, and that the butler was really the one who had done the more serious crime, because he should have checked the cup of wine before he served it to Paro, while the baker's crime was not as bad, because once the pebble's in the bread, you can't do anything about it. There's no way to check the bread afterwards to find out whether it's there or not. And yet, it's the butler who, the chief butler who gets out, and it's the chief baker who is hung. And that showed that Yosef was really something more than just taking a guess. He wasn't just playing the lottery. He was really interpreting dreams in a way that wasn't expected. Now, we also pointed out last time on the bottom of page 218 in Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14, that after Yosef interprets the dream of the butler, he says, Kim zachartani itcha, that, as they translated here, if only you would think of me with yourself. When you go out to Paro, and you remember me to Paro, that, and you'll get me out of this jail. So who remembers what we said last time about that word ki, im zechartani itcha? What is the word?
Four kinds.
There's four kinds. Good. And here?
It's because.
So how would because fit in over here?
Because you'll remember me, you're getting out.
Okay. The reason why you're getting out of jail, actually the reason why you got into jail in the first place, and the reason why you're getting out is only so that you'll remember me to Paro. That's what Yosef is telling the butler, that the whole reason why this all happened to you and why I'm getting out, while you're getting out, is in order to get me out. And that's what the Mefarshim say. It's actually the Beis Halevi says this. And that's what he tells the butler. And Yosef is correct. He's telling the butler that eventually you're going to get me out of jail, which is eventually what happens. 2 years later, he will get out of jail because of the butler. Now, we mentioned last time that there is a major discussion over here about Yosef asking the butler to remember him to Paro, and how that was the wrong thing for Yosef to do. That's what we mentioned last time. But we haven't discussed why, and we said that tonight we'll have to discuss it further. So, here we have a question of hishtadlus. Now, what is hishtadlus?
You have to make an effort.
You have to make an effort. Okay, so the classic hishtadlus, the classic example everybody says about hishtadlus is that on Rosh Hashanah, it's already predetermined for the year how much parnas, how much money we will each make. But a person has no right to sit back and say, well, it's already predetermined, it's already predestined, so if I just sit back and sip lemonade, that Hashem will pour money into my lap. So that is not true. And the reason why that's not true is because there's an expectation that Hashem has that we put in our hishtadlos, we put in our effort. But there's always a question of what is the correct amount of hishtadlos. That's always an issue. How much do you do? Should you work 9 to 5? Should you work 9 to 1? Should you work 6 days a week? Should you work 5 days a week? How much should you hold down two jobs? Hold down one job? How much hishtadlus is called an appropriate amount of hishtadlus? And this is a question that's very hard to answer. Each person has to know their own circumstances. But we know, for example, that Hashem does not want us working 7 days a week. That we know, because of Shabbos. So we know Hashem only wants us to work 6 days a week. So we know for a fact that 7 days a week is too much hishtadlus. That's too much effort. Hashem does not expect us to put in that much effort. And putting in that much effort will not get us more money in the end. It was already determined. Let's say, for example, let's say on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem determined that Reuven is going to get $100,000 this year. Now, Reuven has to work to get that $100,000. How much should he work? I don't know. That's not clear. But is there any question that Hashem expects him to work 7 days a week? Of course not. Because we know about Shabbos. So, but on the other 6 days, the question is, how much time does he have to put in order to get that $100,000? So that's not clear. Hashem obviously wants Reuven to be able to be healthy. So Reuven has to be able to sleep, and he has to be able to eat, and he has to be able to take care of whatever. If he has to go to shul, he has to daven. Right? All these things are things that Hashem expects of Reuven, so that he would not expect him to work and not be able to do those things. What many of the Mefarshim say over here is that everybody, the level of hishtadlus a person is supposed to put in, depends on that person's connection to Hashem. That the more connected we are to Hashem, and the more emunah, the more faith that we have in Hashem, then the less hishtadlus is necessary. So that would mean you could have two people, each of whom had the same decree on Rosh Hashanah that they should each get the same amount of money, but one is very, very close to Hashem, and one is a regular person. The one who is very close to Hashem and has a lot of emunah, Hashem expects less hishtadlus from him, because we know that really it all comes from Hashem anyway. After all, Reuven, who it was predetermined he would get $100,000, he goes to work. And he works, and he's in sales. So he makes a commission on his sales. So he works and he runs his sales, and he makes $100,000 worth of sales. Now, did he make the money, or did Hashem give him the money? Hashem gave it to him, that we know. But it certainly appears as if he made the money. It's very difficult to separate one's hishtadlus from the result of the hishtadlus. Mm-hmm. We put in the effort, the money comes, well, it feels like I did it. But we know that that's not really the case. I did it because I worked, because Hashem told me to work, but the money is actually coming separately. The more that a person is connected to Hashem, the more, the greater emunah they have, then the hishtadlus that is necessary becomes less, because a person recognizes it's all from Hashem. Now, I've told you this mashal before, that when it comes to the real great ones, they can do something that for them is wrong, that for us wouldn't only be not wrong, it would be right for us to do it. And the example I usually use for this, as I've told you before, is the example my father-in-law uses, and his example is a burp. A burp. A belch. Is it appropriate, is it nice for a grown man to belch in public?
No.
We would say that's disgusting. Okay. What if it's not a grown man? What if it was a 10-year-old and he belches in public? The parents may be a little embarrassed, but they're not. People sitting around will understand he's a 10-year-old. That's what 10-year-olds do. They think it's funny, so they do it. And what if it's an infant?
It's a must.
It's not just acceptable. What happens?
It's a must.
They applaud, right? Hey, the baby burped.
Yeah.
Right? So what for the adult is disgusting, for the baby is not just not disgusting, it's desirable.
Commendable.
Commendable. It's good. It prevents all kinds of crying later.
Right.
Yeah.
And being up at night.
And being up at night. Right. So there are things that you can have a great tzaddik that if he does it, it's bad. But on our level, if we do it, it's not just not bad, it may be good. It may be the right thing to do. It depends on where we are in our growth. This is a classic example. What Yosef did in asking the butler to remember him to Paro, the Medrash tells us was wrong. Yosef was putting in too much hishtadlus. Yosef should have said, I am trusting in Hashem. I know it's going to happen. I will daven that it should happen. And he would not ask the butler to help him out. Because by asking the butler to help him out, for Yosef, that was putting too much trust in man and too little trust in Hashem. if any of us would have been in Yosef's shoes, it would have been correct for us to ask the butler to save us. In fact, if we would not have asked the butler to save us, Hashem may have legitimately said, why didn't you put in the correct hishtavos? Where's your effort? You can't just sit back and think it's going to happen. You need to work. You have to ask the butler for help. That would be the normal thing to do. So what may be appropriate and desirable for us is actually wrong for Yosef. That's the way that many of the Mefarshim explain is what's happening over here with Yosef and the butler. We know that he was wrong on his level. We also know that it wasn't a terrible thing to do, and that for us, it would have been correct. Now, what is the result of Yosef's mistake? Because he asked the butler for help.
He stayed 2 extra years from
Sinai. Okay, so we read through on page 220. He goes through the baker's dream. And then finally, we have the last few psukim in the parsha, starting with Pasuk Chaf 20, on page 220. Vahi bayom ha-shlishi, was on the third day, Yom Huledes es Paro, the day that Paro had been born. Vayas mishtel v'chol avadav, he made a party for all of his servants. Vayisa es rosh sar ha-mashkim, and he lifted up the head of the sar ha-mashkim, of the butler, which means he remembered the butler, he thought about the butler. Ves rosh sar ha-alfim, v'soch avadav, and the head of the chief baker amongst his servants. He thought about him as well. And he returned the butler to his post of cupbearer, okay. And he put the cup on the hand of Paro. And the chief baker he hung, exactly as Yosef had interpreted it for them. Then finally, v'lo zachar sar ha-mashkim es Yosef. The sar ha-mashkim, the chief butler, did not remember Yosef. That means on that day. Vayishkachehu, and he forgot him after that day. And the next parasha, on page 222, which we're not actually beginning, we're just going to read the first pasuk. Vayhi miketz shnasayim yamim. It was after 2 years, Ufaro cholem, and Paro is dreaming, v'hinei omed al ha'yor, and he's standing on the river, and you know how the dream is going to be about the 7 fat cows, 7 skinny cows, the 7 large sheaves of wheat, the 7 skinny sheaves of wheat, etc. And this is going to be about the years of plenty and the years of famine. Yosef will finally get out of jail to interpret Paro's dreams. Had he not asked the butler for help, then he would have gotten out 2 years earlier. But because he asked for help, therefore, he had to languish in jail another 2 years. This then begs the question, what happened during those 2 years? What would have been different had Yosef gotten out of jail 2 years earlier?
Famine would have eventually started sooner.
Okay. You're suggesting that the years of plenty would have started earlier, and the years of famine would have started earlier. That's what it seems. It seems. Rather than saying there would have been a 2 year lapse between the dreams and the beginning of the famine, of the years of plenty, everything would have been accelerated 2 years. Okay. So, but we're going to think about this. What would have been different? Why 2 years? And this is really the most important part of the question. How was this a tikkun? How did this correct the mistake that Yosef made? Let's understand. Hashem always deals mida keneged mida, measure for measure. Hashem, especially when dealing with tzaddikim, but certainly when dealing with the Jewish people as well, as a whole, Hashem does not just punish to hurt. Hashem always punishes to correct. So Yosef, being stuck in jail an extra 2 years, was meant to teach him the lesson that he had put in too much effort. And now he would learn that he should not have put in that much effort for him. How does 2 years teach us that? It's obvious the remaining in jail would teach him that he should put in too much effort, because he put in effort to get out of jail. And now, Hashem is saying, well, you put in the effort, it's going to backfire. You're going to stay in jail for 2 more years. But why 2 years? Why not 1 year? Why not 5 years? What's 2 years?
Because maybe binyan, to make binyan older, and then it was maybe preordained at the time he was going to be away from Yaakov.
Okay, maybe that's to do with how long he's away from Yaakov. Okay. To answer this question, we're going to go through some of the years, and I'm going to show you a major event that took place during these 2 years of Yosef's imprisonment. Had he gotten out of jail 2 years earlier, he would have been out of jail for this major event. But because he got out of jail 2 years later, he was still in jail for this major event. What event is that? And more importantly, what is the significance of that event? So, let us go through some of the years over here. We have still on the board from last time our discussion of the years that he was sold and how he went through being a slave and then a prisoner. We said last time how he was gone for 22 years. We know he was a slave in Potiphar's house for 1 year. We know that he was a prisoner with the butler and baker for 1 year. We know that he was in prison an additional 2 years. 7 years of plenty, 2 years of famine. There's 9 other years where, as I mentioned to you last time, there is a debate whether those 9 other years go with the prison years. In other words, he was in prison for a total of 10 years rather than 1. Or were the 9 years before he was sold to Potiphar, which means he was a slave for 10 years, 9 being sold from master to master, and finally 1 year with Potiphar, and then 1 year in jail. So that's a matter of debate where you put the extra 9 years. 10 years as a slave or 10 years as a prisoner. But everybody agrees to the rest of the story, 2 years additionally in prison because he asked for help, 7 years of plenty, 2 years of famine, you end up with 22 years. That's the story of Yosef's 22 years. Let us track as we use our professional eraser over here. Let us track the life of Yaakov first. Let's go with Yaakov first. Okay. Yaakov was how old when he got the brachos, he got the blessings from his father?
17.
He was 63 years old. 63 years old. That's blessings. Okay? Then, before he ran away to Laban's house, what did he do for 14 years? Okay. So, till he was 77, he was learning. Okay. Then he went to Laban's house. And you know, of course, there was 7 years of work for, well, we'll call it first work, because those were, he was working for Rachel, but he ended up getting Leah. Then 7 years of a second amount of work. Okay. Then 6 years he worked for making parnasa in order to have something to walk away with. So that was his third amount of work. And then it took him 2 years to come home. I really should have done it a little differently. I'm going to write the years of his life. So I'm going to, I know in your notes you already wrote this down, but we're going to make this, he was 84 when he finished his first term of work, 91 when he finished his second term of work, 97 finished his third term of work, and then it took him 2 years to come home. 2 year journey coming home.
How come they lived so long in those days, Reza?
That's a good question.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
But it was so much less when you're thinking about Adam Harishon.
Yeah, but it seems that in their day already, then the years had gotten shorter. Because they were our patriarchs, they lived a long time.
But he was very strong in spite of that, which is like...
Yeah, Yaakov was very powerful. It was when he was 77 years old that he easily knocked the stone right off the well.
Yeah.
And that was... not superhuman. He didn't get superhuman. That was his natural strength. Clearly from Rashi. So he comes home when he's 99. He's away from his father for 22 years, from 77 till 99. Total of 22 years. Just like the 22 years of Yosef. He was away, you mean, because the other 14. Right. So the Chazal tell us that he was not held accountable for those 14 years. Since those were years of study, he wasn't held accountable for them. What'd you ask?
But why he didn't wait? His father was waiting until much earlier.
Why did he wait that long?
63, he didn't wait.
That's a good question. Okay. Now, how long after Yaakov came back to his father Yitzchak, how long was it before Yosef was sold? So Yosef was born at the end of his second term when he was 91. And how old was Yosef when he was sold?
17.
So it would be 9 years later when Yaakov was 108. That is when Yosef is sold. Okay?
Wow.
And the next thing that we know, as far as Yaakov is concerned, the next thing that we know, the Torah fast forwards 22 years. When Yaakov is 130 years old, he meets Paro. He finally comes down to Egypt, and he meets Paro. At 130, he meets Paro. How do you spell Paro in English? Pharaoh. Okay, Paro. We'll just do it like that. We'll do it with the people. Paro. And if you look, take this with me. If you look, I'll just show you that pasuk. If you look in Parashas Vayigash, Parashas Vayigash, keep the place on page
222.
What's that?
260 to 61.
That would go to page 264.
264.
264. Top of the page. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Vayomer Paro Yaakov. Paro said to Yaakov, Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecha. How old are you? And we'll discuss when we get to this. Bulinetta will discuss why he asked that question. Vayomer Yaakov Paro Yemei Shnei Megurai. The years of my sojourning, Shloshim Ma'as Shana, 130 years old. That's how old he was. All right, I got it right. Yeah. Okay. Good. Good thing it all works out. Okay. So there we have Yaakov's life. Now, how much older than Yaakov was his father Yitzchak? Who wants to look in the beginning of Parashas Toldos to tell us how old Yitzchak was when Yaakov was born? You can call out the page. How about that? Not 30.
63.
Close. He was 60 years old. If you look in Parashas Toldos, right in the beginning.
She went 24 before she had.
What's that?
Age 124.
Okay, 124.
She was barren for 20 years?
She was barren for 20 years, correct.
He was 40 when they got married.
I'm sorry. It's later on. Page 126.
Isaac was 60 years.
Yeah.
126,
verse 26. Mm-hmm. The end of Pasuk Chava, verse 26 says, V'Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Beledes Osam. Mm-hmm. Yitzchak was 60 years old when they were born. Mm-hmm. Okay? So let's work it out. Let's just add 60 years to all of these things so we know how old Yitzchak was when each of these events happened. Yaakov was blessed when Yitzchak was 123 years old. Then, when Yaakov is 77, Yitzchak is 37. When Yaakov is 84, Yitzchak is 144.
Oh, I see
what you're... When Yaakov is 91, Yitzchak is 151. Right? Just adding 60 years to all of these numbers. Third year of Vogue, 97, he's 157. 99, he's 159. when Yosef is sold at 108, Yaakov, Yitzchak is 168. How long did Yitzchak live?
70.
Yitzchak lived to be 180 years old. So he's 168 when Yosef is sold, and he's 180 when he dies. Twelve years after Yosef is sold, Yitzchak dies. Let's look at these years again. He's sold, he's a slave, and he's in prison. The total of that amount of time is 11 years. It's not clear, as I said, whether it's 10 years as a slave, 1 year in prison, 1 year as a slave, 10 years in prison. Either way, it's 11 years. That's the point, right here, is when Yosef asks for help. Right there, after 11 years of being sold, that's where Yosef asks the butler for help. And because he asks, he gets 2 more years in prison, and he gets out on year 13 of his being sold, instead of year 11 of his being sold. What's the significant event that happened?
Yitzchak
dies. Yitzchak dies in the middle of these 2 years in prison. The year after Yosef asks the butler for help, that's when Yitzchak dies. Had Yosef not asked the butler for help, he would have gotten out of prison a year before his grandfather's death. Because he asked the butler for help, he gets out of prison a year after his grandfather's death. That's the significant event that happens during this time. And our job is to figure out what difference does it make. Any questions on this? Okay, that either means it's very clear or very unclear. Okay. What happened in Egypt during this time? During this time of Yitzchak, of Yosef being in jail for 2 more years, Yitzchak dies during that time. That's what changed back at home. Yitzchak had been alive, now Yitzchak has died. What happens in Egypt during those 2 years? Look on page 222. Share with you, I think I've shared this with the Yechezkel class already, but let me share with you what to me is one of the most fascinating discoveries that I've ever seen in Chumash. Again, I told you we'd read only the first pasuk. Vayhimi keitz shnasayim yomim, it was at the end of 2 years. Ufaro cholim, and Paro is dreaming. Vihinei omeid al yor, and behold, he is standing on the river. The dream, Paro's dreams, are told in the present tense. Paro is dreaming, and he's standing on the river. We're being put in his dream. It's being narrated to us as if we're standing there. This is not the typical way the Torah relates a story. Usually the Torah tells you the story in past tense. Vayachalom Paro, Paro dreamed, Vinei, Vayamod alayar, he stood on the river. Usually it's all in the past tense. Unusual for the Torah to speak in the present tense. And if you go through the rest of this, which we will next time we are together to start Parshas Miketz, we'll see that there's many present tense verbs in the discussion of Paro's dreams. So we're being told this in real time. And behold, Paro is standing on the river. And behold, the cows are emerging from the river, etc., etc., etc. Why is it in the present tense? The Arachayim HaKadosh says a fascinating observation. He says, you know why it's in the present tense? Because these dreams that Paro had, why did Paro have these dreams?
So that Yosef would be called to interpret them.
Okay, so Yosef would be called to interpret them. This is how Yosef not only got out of jail, but this is how Yosef had his meteoric rise to power. He not only gets out of jail, he ends up the viceroy of Egypt. He goes from rags to riches, literally, in a matter of minutes. Yosef, this is going to be his ultimate rise to power. Yosef, Paro's dreams are for that purpose. That was supposed to have happened 2 years ago. They were 2 years late. Really, it should have happened right when the butler got out of jail. What was supposed to happen is, the butler was supposed to get out of jail that very night, the night after Paro's birthday party. He was supposed to have a dream, and he'd be beside himself. I don't know what's going on. Why? What am I doing? Who knows how to interpret these dreams? No one would be able to interpret them. And the butler would say, oh, you know what? I was just in jail with this Yosef guy, and he interpreted my dreams. Why don't you call him out? And he'd be called out, and he'd interpret Paro's dreams. That's what should have happened. But instead, it took 2 years till it happened.
Could it have been a recurring dream, and just couldn't remember it?
Says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, Paro had this dream for 2 years running. 2 years running. Ufaro Cholem. Paro is dreaming. He has this dream over and over and over and over again, but he keeps forgetting the dream. He dreams, forgets. Dreams, forgets. Dreams, forgets. Because everything was set. He was ready to have the dream for Yosef to come out of jail. But it got delayed. So he's now having the dream over and over and over again. Now I ask you, why is that necessary? Why is it necessary to dream the dream and forget it? Why does Hashem have him do that? Just don't dream. What's the point?
He wants him to take it seriously. He wants Paro. Hashem wants Paro to take it seriously, so he keeps giving him the same dream.
But he doesn't even know it. Paro wakes up in the morning and is oblivious. It's only after 2 years that he finally has a dream and remembers it.
Then he'll know when the interpretation is correct.
What's that?
Will he know then when the interpretation is correct if he's had it so many times?
Okay, you're saying it just becomes more powerful.
Right.
I'm thinking that since Joseph had the potential to do the right thing, it was potential.
Okay.
But because he didn't do it, he shifted all the possibilities.
Okay, good. You know what happened in Egypt for those 2 years while Yosef was in jail? Absolutely nothing. Nothing happened for 2 years. It was the same thing every single day for 2 years running. Because the stage had been set. It wasn't just the dreams that were set. Whatever had to happen for Yosef to have a meteoric rise to power was set in Egypt. Whatever cabinet posts were filled by the right people in the right places at the right time, whatever details were necessary for Paro to react the way he did, and for the butler to react the way he did, and for all the officers, because the Torah only tells us the bare bones of the story. Obviously, there's a lot more going on in Yosef all of a sudden becoming the viceroy. It was all set. The chess game had been perfectly situated. It was all set up. But there was a delay. Yosef did something that required him staying in jail another 2 years. So Hashem hit the pause button on Egypt. Egypt was on a delay for 2 years straight. Paro dreams and forgets. Dreams and forgets. Dreams and forgets. And the whole country is running
away. Does he know he's dreaming?
When he wakes up, he doesn't even remember that he dreamed.
Oh, he doesn't.
Right, you're right. If he would remember that he dreamed, then it would bother him. We have that with Nebuchadnezzar, which Rashi actually contrasts over here. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream in Sefer Daniel. He remembers that he dreamed, but he doesn't even remember what the dream was.
Right.
But it bothers him that he dreamed. Here, Paro doesn't even remember that. Nothing. It's just over and over and over and over again. The whole country is on hold.
Were babies born during this time?
I don't know. did their lives change? Did the lifespan go for that? I don't know. You know, it would be a perfect thing for Einstein to think about. Right? Like, what happened in Egypt? I don't know. But the whole country was just on hold. Because the whole system was set up for Yosef. And ultimately for us. Because we had to end up in Egypt. And the way we were going to end up in Egypt was Yosef was going to become the viceroy. There were going to be years of plenty, which was going to make Egypt a very wealthy country. Then there were going to be years of famine, which would then force Yaakov and the rest of the family to come down to Egypt and meet Yosef. All of that was being set up, but it had to take a pause. So in Egypt, nothing happened for 2 years. Certainly nothing of significance. In Eretz Yisrael, what happened was Yitzchak's death. That's all that happened. That was the one change that happened, the one major change that happened. So, then, we have to examine it again. What is so significant about Yitzchak's death, and how does that play in to Yosef's mistake and the correction of the mistake?
Had Yosef known he would have gone back then?
You're saying had Yosef been out?
Been out and knew Yitzchak died, would he have gone back home then?
It's interesting. It's interesting. It doesn't seem that way because Yosef was still waiting for the dreams to be interpreted, his own dreams to come true. So, but okay, that's a good.
That could happen anywhere.
That's true. That's true. That's true. That's true. Perhaps. That's interesting. That's interesting. Yitzchak, we already pointed out, is the shadowy figure in the story of Yosef. Yitzchak, we haven't seen his name since his death was recorded back in Parshas Vayishlach. In Miketz, we don't see his name at all. In Vayeshev, we don't see his name at all. But he is mentioned in Parshas Vayeshev, but not by name. And I pointed this out to you when we saw it. When Yosef is sold, there is a reference to Yitzchak, but not by name. And let's turn back. Let's take a look at that.
What Parsha?
In Parshas Vayeshev.
Okay.
On page 206. This is where this Yosef's sale is recorded, and they break the news to Yaakov. So we'll start with Lamed Aleph, verse 34. Vayikra Yaakov, simlosav, Yaakov tore his clothing. Vayasem sak b'masnav, he put sackcloth on himself. Vayisabel al beno yomim rabim, and he mourned for his son many days. We pointed out at the time that because Yosef was actually still alive, then Yaakov did not have the bracha of forgetting about the deceased, which normally a person has after a year. Yaakov mourned him for many years. And all his sons and all his daughters or granddaughters got up to console him. And he refused to be consoled. And he said, for I will go down to the grave in mourning for my son. And I'll mourn the rest of my life for my son. Vayevk oso aviv. Now here we have a lot of pronouns. And he cried for him, his father. His father cried for him. So if one reads this without thinking, one could think that it means, and Yaakov cried for Yosef.
Mm-hmm.
But the Pasuk just said that. The Pasuk said that Yaakov was in mourning for Yosef. And therefore, Chazal tell us, and Rashi cites it, Vayevk oso aviv, his father cried for him. Who's the subject of the sentence?
Yitzchak.
And who's the object of the sentence?
Yaakov.
Yaakov, who we were talking about until now, who refused to be consoled, his father, Yitzchak, cried for him, for Yaakov. Yitzchak cried for Yaakov. Why did he cry for Yaakov?
He knew the truth.
Because Rashi tells us he knew the truth. He knew Yosef was still alive. Yitzchak was fully apprised of the situation. He understood that Yosef was still alive. So how come he didn't tell Yaakov? Chazal tell us, because Yitzchak said, Hashem told me that Yosef is still alive. He didn't tell Yaakov. If Hashem isn't telling Yaakov, it means Hashem doesn't want Yaakov to know. Then I can't tell him either.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we talked about Rivka's prophecy with Yaakov being the one who's going to control Esav, and how Rivka felt she couldn't tell her husband Yitzchak because it was a prophecy that was only for her. Here, Yitzchak has the same reaction. It's my prophecy, and I can't tell Yaakov. But he cried for Yaakov because he felt terrible that his son Yaakov is in mourning for his grandson Yosef, for no reason, because Yosef is in fact alive. So Yitzchak cried for Yaakov. Mm-hmm. That's what the Torah tells us.
Did Yitzchak involve in that vow that the brothers have taken?
No.
No.
No, the brothers took a vow and prevented anybody from divulging the information, including the heavenly court. That was an incredible thing. We talked about that. We don't really understand what that means. But they were somehow able to put a gag order on the heavenly court. Then somehow the brothers were able to do that.
So then how was Yitzchak?
They went to tell Yaakov. That the gag order that Yaakov should not find out. Right. So Yitzchak does not tell Yaakov, but he knows about it. And so he cries. So here we have a reference that Yitzchak knows and cries for his son Yaakov, but doesn't tell. And he dies with his secret. 11 years later, Yitzchak will die, and on his deathbed, he will not tell Yaakov that Yosef is still alive. Yaakov has to endure another 11 years of agony over his not having his son, and Yitzchak dies with the secret.
Why?
Because he can't tell.
No, I mean, why does he have to...
What's that?
Why does he, Yaakov, have to suffer like that?
That's a different question. That we said was because Yaakov was away from his father for 22 years, which is hard to understand because it seems that that was warranted. That's a different... You're right. It's a good question. That's a separate discussion. So... This herein lies the key to the whole story. Hashem told Yitzchak. Yitzchak knows. Why did Hashem tell Yitzchak? Why tell him? If Yitzchak is not going to be able to do anything about it except cry for Yaakov, and he's going to die with his secret, why does Hashem tell Yitzchak? What's going on? It seems to be completely pointless. Yitzchak is told. He's upset about it. He cries for his son Yaakov, and then he dies 11 years later without telling him. Why does Yitzchak know?
Well, maybe you can want him to suffer. You know, he didn't want Isaac to suffer because it was a different set of circumstances.
Okay, so but it's trading one suffering for another. He doesn't suffer for the loss of Yosef, but he suffers for his son Yaakov being in
right.
such turmoil.
But then he would have suffered for both.
That's true. Okay, good. So maybe he was sparing Yitzchak that turmoil. Good. Seems to me that Yitzchak is told for the very reason that the Torah tells us. The Torah tells us why Yitzchak was told. Why was Yitzchak told? So that he would cry for his son Yaakov. Why was Yitzchak told?
To invoke heavenly mercy.
To invoke heavenly mercy. Yitzchak was told not that he could tell Yaakov, but that he could daven for his son Yaakov. Because what is the strength of Yitzchak? Remember, each of the patriarchs stand for a different midah, a different character trait, a different strength. Avraham is chesed. Yitzchak is?
Din.
Is din, or gevura, or strength. Which is avoda, which is service, which is tefillah. Mm-hmm. All that is Yitzchak. Yaakov is Torah. It's a different focus. Yitzchak stands for tefillah, for prayer. That's what he stands for avoda, for service. Yitzchak was an ola semima. Yitzchak had been brought up on the altar, and he became as if he was a sacrifice to God. He was not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for that reason. He was kadosh, he was holy. He signifies the service in the Beis HaMikdash. And so Yitzchak, he's the one who represents service, which is tefillah. Davening replaces or goes along with the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem tells Yitzchak so that he will pray, so that he will daven on behalf of his son Yaakov.
So what about this next 11 years? From
okay, good. What about the next 11 years? What was supposed to happen was that Yitzchak, that Yosef would become the viceroy before Yitzchak's death. Mm-hmm. That's what was supposed to happen. But instead, it happens after Yitzchak's death. So the situation gets better for Yosef. It was supposed to have gotten better when his grandfather Yitzchak was still alive. But instead it got better for Yosef after his grandfather passed away. That says to me that Yosef's situation improving is connected to his grandfather Yitzchak. Yitzchak's davening does not help his son Yaakov, because Yaakov still is in agony over his son Yosef, but it does help his grandson Yosef. And Yosef enjoys a change in his circumstance. He goes literally from rags to riches. He goes from being a prisoner in a hole in the ground to becoming almost, probably the most powerful person in the world. In the world. Second to Paro, but Paro gave all the power to Yosef. Yosef is controlling everything, and that is attributable to Yitzchak, his grandfather.
It would have been a problem, though, if Yosef had not gotten these 2 extra years, because had it been 2 years earlier and the famine would have begun, and the family would have had to go to Mitzrayim, then Yitzchak himself would have had to go to Mitzrayim, and he's not allowed to leave there to Israel.
That's good, except that there were 7 years of plenty first.
Oh, right.
So he would have died. You're right. He would have died during the years of plenty.
Okay.
The first, after the first year of plenty. Right. No, it was good. Okay. So, again, what's the difference if he dies before or after Yosef gets out of jail? So it seems to me that what is happening is as follows. Yitzchak stands for prayer. Not only does he stand for prayer, but it is his prayer that is directly affecting his grandson, Yosef. When I talked before about hishtadlus, putting in effort, Hashem decrees on Rosh Hashanah that I'm going to make, let's make it really good, I'm going to make $5 million this year.
Yay!
Okay? Okay. I'll share it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so we just said before though that I can't just sit back and sip lemonade. I got to put my effort. So I got to work. Perhaps not as a kol rabbi. Okay. But I got to put in some work for that $5 million. You never know, right? Okay. So you got to put in some work for that $5 million. Okay. But I also daven 3 times a day, right? Now in davening, there's a bracha. Barech aleinu Hashem Elokeinu es Hashanah Zos. Give us a blessing. Make this year a good year. Ves kolmine sfosot tava. All of the produce, all the crops of the year. Give us parnasa. Give us our livelihood. Now, where does that fit in? Aren't I putting in my effort by working for a living? Where does the prayer fit in? It's already decreed. Hashem has already written in the ledger. Pransky gets $5 million. Okay, fine. So now, what happens? But I got to put in a shavas, so I work. So where does prayer fit in? Hashem, please give me parnasa. Hashem, please give me parnasa 3 times a day, every day. Hashem, please give me parnasa. Please give me parnasa. Where does that fit? It's already there. It's already set up for me.
Yeah, that way, each day maybe you'll get some. The other way, maybe you would get it all over there.
Okay. 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 I want it in installments, please. Okay. 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 Good. Good.
But probably prayer is like that. It's installments. You know. It's,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
Like, it's, we're not supposed to wait till Rosh Hashanah to, like...
You're right.
Here we are.
You're right. You're 100% right. Okay, good. So it's got to be daily. Okay.
But Hashem wants us to be inspired to Him.
And He wants us to daven.
He wants us to daven to turn to Him. So, and we shouldn't assume that Hashem is going to give us the $5 million for the year. We have to dash out. Hashem wants to get tefillah. It's our responsibility to daven.
Good.
Also, it's a continual fight with the Yetzer Hara. Oh, I got to daven again. Oh, you know, it's a continual, like, get over it. You know, just get to it.
Okay.
That's
something else to overcome.
That's job. That's work too.
Davening. You're all saying this. You're all saying the same thing. Davening is also hishtadlus. The hishtadlus, the effort that Hashem expects me to put in, is not just going to work. It's also to daven for it. That's part of the program. The program is that on Rosh Hashanah it's decreed, and now I have to earn it. How do I earn it? By going to work properly, putting in the effort that I'm supposed to put in, but also davening. That's all part of the system. When I said before in the beginning of the class that, well, How much hishtadlus do you put in? Depends on the person. What is the main factor that determines how much hishtadlus one puts in? Everybody has to put in the same amount of hishtadlus. There's no difference between a big tzaddik or a regular person like anybody in this room, like all of us. There's no difference. The question is the form of the hishtadlus. You see, we all work and we also daven. But as a person gets greater and greater, the davening becomes the more and more important part of the equation. It's still hishtadlus, it's still effort, but which effort connects you more to Hashem? Working or davening? The davening connects you more directly to Hashem. And it is that which determines, which is based on how connected you are. The more we are connected to Hashem, then the more Hashem expects us, rather than to put in the physical effort of work, to put in, it's also physical effort, but to put in the more, you want to call it emotional, intellectual effort of prayer. You got to work. You got to put in effort. But the effort changes depending on the person. Some people are expected to put it at 90% physical labor, 10% prayer. Other people, it's the reverse. It's 10% physical labor and 90% prayer. That's the difference. But everybody's got to put in effort. Yosef was on a madrega, or he should have understood that he was on the level, that for him, the prayer should have been almost 100%. 99.9% of his effort should have been prayer. Only a 0.1% of his effort should have been anything other than prayer. He put in a little bit too much effort on the non-prayer side by asking the butler. He made it, instead of 0.1%, he made it 0.2%. A little bit too much. For us, of course we'd ask the butler, because for us, we're not on that level. We're putting in 99.9% of prayer. That was the mistake Yosef made. Which of the three patriarchs, which of the three avos, is the one who represents the power of prayer?
Yitzchak.
And so, when Yitzchak is still alive, that's when Yosef should have emerged from prison, having championed the power of Yitzchak, having mastered that strength of channeling all of his effort into prayer. That's where Yosef was meant to be. There's two ideas, two concepts that seem to be contradictory, and they play in exactly to this discussion. And this is the last thing we're gonna point out for tonight. On the one hand, we say, as long as a tzaddik is still alive, even if he's very old, or she is very old, even if they're not able to be out and about and teaching and encouraging people, bringing people closer to Hashem, the fact that they're alive puts a certain strength in the world, because they represent a certain power, a certain strength that they have. And as long as they're alive, that is still in the world. The Mishnah says in Sota that when certain sages died, certain things stopped. There were certain elements of the world. The Gemara says when one sage died, then the good taste was taken from the produce. Produce didn't taste as good anymore after that sage died. After the other sage died, something else happened. There are certain advantages that we have, which we don't recognize that we have, as long as the sage is alive. As long as, the Gemara says, as long as Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Shimon was alive, no one died in his area, no one died prematurely. No one died before their time, as long as he was alive. No one.
Who?
Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's son.
Oh.
As long as Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was alive, the world didn't need rain, because a storm can cause all kinds of damage. You didn't need it. The ground was moist and wet and able to grow crops without any rain, as long as Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was alive. When they died, things changed. As long as they're alive. As long as Yitzchak was alive, the power, the koach, the strength of tefillah was very palpable in the world. It was something that was easier to latch onto. Once he died, it became more difficult. Yosef in jail was supposed to be grabbing on to that strength of prayer that was represented by Yitzchak, and on his level, he made a mistake. On the other hand, the Mefarshim tell us, when a tzaddik dies, someone else has to fill the void. Someone has to step into the gap. The Gemara says, "V'zarach Hashem u'shuvah Hashemesh." Before a tzaddik dies, there's already someone else there to replace that tzaddik. Which means, whatever strength that tzaddik represents, when he dies, there's someone there that can step in to the breach and take over what that person was doing. When a tzaddik passes away, there is opportunity for someone else to pick up the slack. As long as Avram was alive, Chesed was, so to speak, taken care of. It was championed. It was fully engaged. When Avram died, there was a gaping hole. Who's going to be a Baal Chesed? Who's going to take care of Chesed? Rivka steps into the gap because she's a Baalas Chesed, and others as well. But there's someone has to step in and take over the Chesed that is gone once Abraham dies. Yosef, when Yitzchak was alive, didn't fully grasp that strength of Yitzchak, but after Yitzchak dies, Yosef learns his lesson and grasps that strength and fills the gap of Yitzchak's death. That gaping void, there's no one now who represents prayer. Yosef steps in. And now Yosef becomes the representative of prayer. And therefore, the year after Yitzchak's death, Yosef does emerge from jail. And now he goes on to fulfill his life's work. And that's, in my opinion, what is happening over here. That, it seems to me, is what's happening. That it should have been the year before. That didn't work. Instead, it's the year after. Yes. Yaakov represented Torah. He represented Torah, Emes and Torah. So he represented something else. It's not that it was impossible, but he had a different mission. Yosef, it was very necessary for him to have this mission, because he's going to be the viceroy. And we'll see, as he's viceroy, that he needs to be a person who is completely connected to davening, to prayer. Yeah?
How does that happen? I mean, how do we understand that to happen? Like, we know that in jail, he finally got it. How do we...
Because he got out.
Well, he got out, yeah. And so how do we connect with that formula? He got out, so he understood what Yaakov's...
He finally... Hashem would not have taken him out. He needed to learn this lesson to get out of jail. So the extended jail term... was the tikkun, was how it was corrected for him, and how he now emerged from jail a better person. Remember how we talked about how Yosef had to be in jail because in order for him to rise to power, he had to understand that it wasn't about him, it was about Hashem, and he had to be in jail, he had to be low in a pit over and over again. This is a similar idea. The remaining in jail, he learned that he had overstepped his bounds, that he should not have asked for help. Even though we would have been correct to ask for help, but not him.
So why is that 2 years? Maybe it should be right.
Okay, I'm not sure yet. I can't put an exact number. That's a good question. I said before we have to know why 2 years, but I can't put an exact number on it. But it is symmetrical. It should have been a year before Yitzchak's death, and now it's a year after Yitzchak's death. So I don't know exactly what that means. Usually a year is considered to be an amount of time to change something. It's a whole cycle of the whole year. So I don't know exactly 2, maybe it could have been 5. That's a good question. So we're not really pinning that down.